When the guys from the TV show and pop culture phenomenon known as Queer Eye were in town, their local fans were really excited, and their big chance to meet the Fab Five was a book launch event at the Kansas City Public Library. It was the release of a beautiful coffee table book called Queer Eye, Love Yourself, Love Your Life. And during the press conference beforehand, a local journalist stood up to ask a question. Her skirt got a favorable review.
That skirt is
I know, you're a Claudia skirt.
Very beautiful.
Her question, though, was not about fashion. It was about Beth Barden, the chef and owner of Succotash, who food styled the book. The reporter wanted to know how she and Anthony Perovsky became friends. Anthony's the food guy on the Queer Eye show. Here's how he answered.
I was looking for brunch one morning. I really wanted pancakes. So I had pancakes at hers that are served with like a lovely little lingonberry sauce that are made after her grandma's recipe. And we became fast friends. We have a mutual shared passion in like music and art, a love for dogs. And she very quickly became a very close friend.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And today we'll talk to Beth about her personal Queer Eye journey, cooking for the guys on set and food styling their new book. Beth Barden, hello.
Hi.
Did I know you love dogs?
I think you did.
I think I might have one time. Anyway, for people who don't watch the show and haven't seen the book, can you explain both of those things? Like, what is the show and how is the book kind of an extension of that?
Well, I think the show is just kind of a really beautiful reminder that people are more alike than different. And if they choose to reach out to each other and talk about the things that they have in common, I think a lot of gaps are bridged. I think that the reboot is especially kind of tender and...
Yeah, it used to be Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and now it's just Queer Eye, and it's sort of like...
And it's a broad-based approach to just people that are kind of needing a little direction, or like just a little bump in the right direction, or a little leg up, kind of people that, in my mind, kind of people that stop being seen, either because of a life experience and they get into a rut, or somehow stop venturing out. And I think that in general, it's, you know, people will nominate people that they see as just genuinely lovely people that just kind of need a moment to feel special and
like cared for
and seen.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
And so it's they're giving what they call makeovers, but they're not. It's not like the superficial idea of a makeover.
No, it's not. It's really like, let's go into your house. Let's talk to you about why it's like this. Like, why did that not get finished? Or why is everything piled in a corner? Or why are you still wearing the same cargo shorts from 1976? And why do you have a beard that you are hiding behind? Or, you know, just or why does your community center need... something. It's just, it's really, I think, in a really interesting way, answering a need with five kind of specific personalities that have something to add to that person's life and kind of ask the right questions and get them to engage. And I think that's really what it's more about, is just an entertaining way of getting somebody to reconnect to their life and
yeah,
to feel loved, really, so more than anything.
Anthony's role in this, he's who we just heard from. He's the one who kind of helps people figure out their food life.
Yeah, he's the food and wine person on the show, yeah.
And so, and your relationship with him, it is a professional working relationship, but you guys also really clicked. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, and I would say, honestly, it's really more of a personal relationship than a professional relationship at this point. I got hired initially to do catering for the Queer Eye show, and so I was doing production catering for the set and for the guys on the show, and did that for a good amount of time. And in the middle of that, he was also working on a cookbook, and so his cookbook was very consuming for him and took a lot of time. And so instead of deferring to him to do the food part of the cookbook, or the food part of the Queer Eye book, they asked me to food style. And so it was something I hadn't really done a lot of, but kind of my experience in my job and my life leading up to that allowed that to happen.
Okay, so explain what food styling is, because There's a food piece of it, but there's also an aesthetic piece of it. And you have a very specific aesthetic, which we will talk about, but food styling.
Okay, so I, you know, naively thought, okay, sure, I can do this. No problem. I'll do it. I have an opportunity. I'm in. And then I go down the rabbit hole of YouTube and I'm looking and I'm like, oh, and I'm watching, you know, all of this insanity of people spraying this on this and using little these for these. And I'm building this little arsenal toolbox of all of these things that I think I'm going to need, which by the only way, the only thing I used was a makeup sponge to make the pasta stand up. But yeah, it's a strange job. The thing that I was tasked to do was to make food that they could all eat and be photographed eating, and then make a second portion that was just supposed to be lovely to be photographed and, you know, buy the plates, put it on the things, and make it look the way it was supposed to look.
Okay, so your aesthetic, as I mentioned, comes into play here. You do not have a white tablecloth aesthetic.
No.
How would you describe your aesthetic? I mean, I would start with the dish at Succotash that I think represents your style, that rainbow cake. It's famous. You're photographed with it often.
Yeah. I think, to be honest with you, like, food should make you happy. Like, you set a plate down and for whatever reason you should react to it viscerally, either because the color or the way it's plated. It's always, to me, like kind of a wink and a smile when you get something. And if something is too precious to me, it's just, it's not my jam. I love it in other people's places. There's nothing I love more than seeing somebody with a paintbrush and a pair of tweezers and like seven guys putting one plate together. It's amazing. Like, it's amazing. But I don't have the patience for it.
And it's not the reaction. The reaction that food creates is not the reaction you're trying to create.
But it's a beautiful reaction nonetheless. I think that my aesthetic is kind of a, it's happened because of the way my place happened.
Tell that story.
Well, I mean, I started with a place that I basically opened for the price of a used car and a $25 electric plug-in home stove and kind of a punk DIY aesthetic in a city market. And my prep room was down spiral stairs and, you know, my freight elevator was turned into a table because there wasn't enough space. And I think that I wasn't classically trained, and because nobody ever told me what I wasn't supposed to do, I was boundless.
It was a little like Pee Wee Herman's Playhouse meets punk rock.
Yeah, for sure, which is kind of exactly who I am.
Okay, you know? But like, okay, in the intro to the food section of this book, Queer Eye, Love Yourself, Love Your Life, Anthony says that we all have food personalities, and he breaks down his co-star's food types. Like, one guy would probably subsist on Skittles if he could, and then another guy loves anything smothered in cheese. Do you believe in this food type theory?
I believe that people seek out food for different things, and ergo, they have a food type. I think that there is a wide variety of that within that, but yeah, I think people viscerally respond to certain things, and some people are very adventuresome. Some others don't find any value in food or interest in food, and they use it just for fuel. I think there's a really wide spectrum of why people are either interested or disinterested in food, and I think it really is a big component of why people are the way they are.
So this section of the book gives a recipe for each cast member,
yeah,
and it's like their go-to recipe. So not the show-off recipe,
sure,
but the thing they keep going back to.
Sure.
And that's supposed to sort of tell you something about them as people. And so can you talk a little bit about those recipes and how you see them reflecting different personalities?
Well, like Jonathan's, for sure, the hamburger casserole, amazing. I mean, it's one of those things that's just unabashed, guilty pleasure, doesn't care, don't cook, fry up some hamburger, put some cheese on it. It's delicious. It's delicious. Did private chefing for him a big portion of when he was here, and because of all of his traveling, you know, sometimes he'd eat it all, sometimes he wouldn't. But the week that I actually made him his hamburger casserole, gone. Gone. And I made a big one, and it was funny, and I thought, oh, never. But no, gone.
I'm guessing that you have a lot to do with how those pages look, like maybe everything to do with how they look. My favorite image is of a carrot cake. It's got white frosting slathered over it in a very textural way, like not a pristine layer.
Yeah, I did not make it pretty.
No, but you did.
Tasty.
And here, like, it's like this very, like, thickly layered on, like, almost like mountainous frosting. And then there's a slice cut out, which you have to do or you can't see the actual cake.
Right.
But then there are little crumbles visible on the plate, and you see these human traces, which is not always the case in food photography.
Right. And to be honest with you, some of that was a functionality of my not knowing better. But I think it worked out beautifully because the things that I didn't know were the things that I didn't think to be anxious about. And truthfully, that day was one of the most wonderful, insane days in my life.
Tell me about that day.
It was the first day that I really met. It was the first day I met Anthony. It was the first day I met that whole group. And I had met Bobby previous a few times, but just in passing. And it was remarkable. I had been up for 3 days, had shopped for all of the plates, set up the placemats. A lot of the stuff in the book actually exists in my house because it was my stuff, and in the with the prop styling. And I went in, and it was just mayhem. And loading up stuff, like, out of a hot van on the street and, like, hauling it up there and hoping I had everything. And really just, like, freaking out trying to make sure I got everything done. And these guys were all trying to be so sweet and, like, nice, and came in, and I barely could, like, even say hello to them because I was so focused on doing the job at hand. And I remember at one point, Anthony, I looked over and he was just kind of staring at what I was doing, and, like, seemed very interested, and was, like, walking over and watching. And like, it was like this, I know you, you're a kitchen person, you're a like, we just understood each other.
He could read your body language
for
and know what you were experiencing.
For sure. And he was like, I'm really hungry. And I remember, like, working on salmon, and I just was doing something. I picked up a piece of salmon with my bare hand and, like, handed it over to him. And he opened up his hand, and I put this piece of salmon in his hand. And he started eating it, and I was still doing something else. And I picked up a lemon and, like, squeezed a lemon into his hand, and then, like, a pinch of finishing salt.
Which is such, like, the way that people who are super comfortable in a kitchen do interact with food.
With each other. And, like, here's this guy who, like, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, is so many people are, like, just want to be in proximity of. And, like, I was so into what I was doing that I just lost track of, like, what I was in the middle of. I'm just, like, you know, I should have put it on a plate. I should have done all these things. And all the things I should have done, there was no room in my brain for it. So it was just kind of magic.
That's really cool. You know, he is sort of famously not culinary school trained. He's a person who came into food just from the experience of loving it and cooking for himself and cooking for other people.
Yeah, he was Ted Allen's personal chef.
Is that something, though, that you can relate to as far as
100%.
Like, it's not surprising to me that you two would click in that way.
We're very, I mean, internally we are very, very similar. And, like, in our approach to things are very similar. And I think that's what allowed us to just kind of have a really great understanding from the get-go and, like, a really great shorthand.
I understand. I mean, so we've talked about this before, but their whole deal is giving someone a makeover, but not a superficial makeover. It seems
for
like
sure.
The idea is that these are things we do for ourselves, whether you're talking about the grooming piece of it or the cooking piece of it, that these are things, this is self-care. And so it's not about just looking good or wowing people with a beautiful meal. And it specifically, a lot of the times when they're working with men, there's this one episode about, like, this guy who gives, like, one word answers to everything. Mm-hmm. And finally he's asked, you know, have you ever heard of toxic masculinity? And he's like, no. And he's like, this is the reason that you go outside and work on your farm without any sunscreen. It's a very different approach than saying, you know, your skin needs to be perfect and that's why you should use sunscreen.
It's like this is part of the vernacular, and this is part of what is ingrained in you, and we're going to just gently show you that maybe there's something else that you could think about.
So in your time with these five people, did you experience any kind of just that's so such a part of how they're used to interacting with a person? Did they ever kind of, like, gently shepherd you in some way, or did you?
Except for once. Jonathan walked up and we were talking, and he just started, like, playing with the front of my hair And like, and he kept like standing, and my hair was all one length, and he kept moving it over and like pushing it up and making fake bangs. And I was like, oh, so what you're saying is I need bangs? And he just started laughing, and he's like, yeah, you should really go red, like just bright red, like do it. He's like, I can't do it. It would take like 7 hours. And so, of course, I went to my friend who did it, and it took 7 hours because he knew exactly. And I came back to set like a few days later, and he's like, just don't ever change it. Like, can we just say that that's the color and we're done?
That's cool. So as you...
But I will, I guess, like more deeply what you're asking is that it was not intentional, but I think that truthfully I got the best Queer Eye makeover of everyone because I'm 51. I've been doing the same thing for 17 years. And the evolution of my restaurant and my career has been really organic. And it's not left a lot of time for me to think about what I want to do or where I would like to be. I just kind of have organically gone with it. My skill set is vastly different than when I started. But because of the position that I'm in, I'm not allowed to really exercise what I know or what I can do in a way that I've wanted to for a very long time. This allowed me to push myself within a grouping of people who are at the top of their game. I was invited to something that I never expected to be invited to. And once I got there, I was asked to stay. And it was meaningful in a way that I can't really... So grateful.
Oh,
so grateful.
Beth Barden, thank you so much. Beth Food Styled, excuse me, Queer Eye, love yourself, love your life, and she is the owner of Succotash. And now we're going to get a recipe from a local food and drink writer and lifestyle blogger, Emily Ferris. Her website is known as The Boozy Bungalow, and that is because she makes drinks. Hi, Emily.
Hello.
Okay, you have a winter cocktail for us, but you also did stock one of the Queer Eye guys.
Yeah,
for
but
a photo
apparently op. I should have been stalking Beth because I am a food stylist and all I wanted was to have these guys to my house, the Boozy Bungalow, which I describe as carnival chic. So I think our styles are kind of similar.
Yes.
So now I know I should have been stalking you all along. Now I want to be you when I grow up. Yes. So I wanted to have the Fab Five over to the Boozy Bungalow for cocktails. And so I knew they were filming around town. And one day I saw they were in Waldo and I was just like, I'm going to go and see if I can invite them, which was crazy. I should have known to go through PR, but I did end up getting to meet Karamo for a second and take a selfie, and he was super sweet. And then a few months later, I'm the entertaining columnist for Spaces, so I got to interview Bobby Burke for an hour.
Well, let's move on to your recipe.
Yes.
The drink is called the Mold Mule, and I am smitten with the ingredient list.
Yes. So the name is kind of a trick because when you think of a mule as a cocktail, you think of vodka and ginger beer. And this doesn't have vodka and it doesn't have ginger beer in it. It is an agave-based cocktail made with Mean Mule's silver agave spirit. And they make that here in Kansas City. And I make a spiced pomegranate syrup to go with that. And a little bit of orange liqueur. And the brand, Mean Mule, came to me and said, we want to work with you on a fall, winter, Thanksgiving holiday cocktail. And I was a little taken aback because usually my go-to for that is whiskey. Whiskey is a very warm, dark spirit. And I do a lot of spiced syrups to go with these warmer spirits.
Yeah, it's the blanket of liqueurs.
It is. It's a blanket. It's warm. It's warming. It's all – when you think, you know, a holiday drink, either eggnog or whiskey by the fire. And an agave spirit like tequila or mezcal, you usually think summertime, margaritas. So it was a little bit of a excuse me. It was a challenge for me, but it was a fun challenge. And it took me out of my normal comfort zone. And I'd never done a spiced pomegranate syrup before. So I reduced pomegranate juice. I just bought a big bottle of it in the store with cinnamon, like cinnamon sticks. Star anise and whole cloves.
Your kitchen must have smelled great.
Oh, it smelled amazing for 3 whole hours. It smelled amazing.
So walk us through the steps of how to make this drink.
Okay. So I started with 48 ounces of pomegranate juice, put it in a stock, a heavy bottom stock pot on the stove. I added 8 cinnamon sticks, 4 star anise, and a tablespoon of whole cloves. And one thing that is so important when you're using whole spices like that, they have to be fresh. Like if you pull some old jar of cinnamon sticks out of the back of your pantry, no bueno, no good. Like, get rid of it, throw it away, get fresh cinnamon sticks. Your spices, when you open the jar, the bottle, you have to really, you have to smell it. It has to be in your face. So I put that on the stove, brought it to a boil, reduced it for about 2 hours.
And that's just, reducing is basically like you're simmering it
down, so,
like the water.
So you put everything in the pot, put on high heat, it boils. And then when it starts to boil, I just turn the heat all the way down to the very lowest setting and just let it simmer. And so you'll see in my pot, I used a Le Creuset little Dutch oven, which is white enamel on the inside. And you can see when you say reduce by about half, you can see where your pomegranate juice starts because it kind of temporarily stains and it goes down about half the depth. And then at the end, I added some agave syrup to that. And just let it simmer a little bit more. And it made my house smell amazing for three hours and then some. And then you let the syrup cool. And then I use that cooled syrup. I usually chill it in the refrigerator. So it is 1.5 ounces of the Mean Mule agave spirit. And then 1 ounce of the spiced pomegranate syrup. And then for a little sweetness and citrus, I added 1/2 ounce of Grand Marnier, which is an orange liqueur.
So you take a sip of this, and I want you to tell me what do
no,
you...
I want you to take a sip of it. I don't show up here to talk cocktails without bringing something for you to taste.
Okay, well, while you are passing this over here, is there a variation on this that you could imagine making without booze for non-drinkers?
Oh, absolutely, and I have. You could mix this syrup with club soda, and it's really good because the syrup itself is a slightly tart and spicy and sweet, so that covers a lot of flavors that you need already. But even if you wanted it to look really festive and gorgeous, you could mix this with some club soda over ice, put a few fresh pomegranate seeds on top, and it would be festive and gorgeous and bubbly and delicious.
Okay, I just tried it while Emily was talking, and it has, you know, it's funny that you mentioned whiskey at the beginning of the show. There is no whiskey in it, but the way these flavors combine does kind of have kind of a whiskey effect.
It's that warming, those warm notes. You get those warm notes in your mouth.
And I just passed some to Beth Barton. Beth, tell us about this cocktail from your perspective. I'm going to get the chef's review.
It's great because it hits every part of your tongue and it finishes beautifully in a different way than it starts.
And it is festive and red. Also.
Yeah, and it has a beautiful amount of acidity, but then there's also a weight to it because of the way the sugar's like floating in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
I like that review. I'll take that.
It's kind of like the most wonderful like thing that somebody would give you if you had a cold and that you recall being delicious. It's dangerous.
And the beautiful thing about this cocktail is if you're going to a holiday party or you want to make it in advance, you can because there's no soda, there's no fresh fruit in it, so everything is kind of preserved or preservative. So you can mix this ahead, make a big batch of it, put it in the fridge, show up to a party, and you'll be everybody's favorite person.
It tastes like a clove-studded orange smells on your Christmas tree.
Yeah, it has all of those flavors in it.
Beth Barton, thank you for reviewing this cocktail.
Yeah, thank you.
And Emily Ferris, thanks so much.
Thank you. And the full recipe is at theboozybungalow.com.
Thanks, Dina.
Speaking about things that warm you up, which this cocktail definitely does, we're about to talk Indian food and South Asian food more generally. Call with your favorite spot for that cuisine and be ready to describe a dish you like to get there. 816-235-2888. Taj Mahal Indian Restaurant at 75th and Warnell in Waldo has a lunch buffet 7 days a week. And every morning, the staff shows up at 8 to get ready.
I mean, everything we make is from scratch.
Andy Singh has been managing the restaurant for the past 5 years. His father, Herjinder Singh, is from Punjab, India originally. He opened the Waldo restaurant in 2000. Here's what's on today's buffet menu.
So here we got chicken curry, beef curry, chicken tikka masala, chicken chili, and another one here, we got some lentils. And this is veggie korma, is a combination of 9 vegetables. And the saag paneer, that's like a little spinach and with a little homemade cheese. Gulab jamun. Those are like similar to like honey donuts, you know, Indian honey donuts, I would say.
Andy says onions, garlic, ginger, and tomato are the most commonly used ingredients in the kitchen. They'll easily go through 100 pounds of onions in a week. Inside the kitchen, there's a giant tray of dough balls that are just waiting to become the leavened flatbread naan.
Put that in the flour. And we're going to roll it. It's like making a pizza. And you stick it in the clay oven. Like 500 degrees inside.
Andy slaps the dough so it sticks along the inside of the hot oven. And within a few minutes, the bread is ready to go. Aromatic chai tea bubbles on the stove. The Singh family at one point ran three different Taj Mahal locations, but now the original, the one tucked in the corner of a Waldo strip mall, is the only one that remains. And like the neighborhood, it's changing.
It was screaming for, I guess, a major update, so that's what we did now.
The old wood paneling is getting replaced, and they are upgrading the bathrooms and decor. A full renovation should be done in a couple of months. They're also rethinking their approach to spiciness. Taj Mahal is getting past the usual mild, medium, and hot. They have not three levels of spiciness, but 10. And the spiciest dishes are too hot even for Andy.
I usually go medium. I learned my lesson one time. You want me to tell you a little story behind it? We were like five of us guys who used to work in the front. And there's a guy, he lived in Kerala, in India. In Kerala, you would find the spiciest food on the earth. You can't even imagine how spicy food they eat over there. So the guy lived there for a couple years, and he brought this hot sauce back home. He was from Kansas City. So he brought the hot sauce, and he goes, you guys want to try some? He's like, it's really spicy. He said, look, a toothpick. That's how hot it is. He said, just lick the toothpick. Me and another guy, we were like, whatever, man. We just took a spoon of it. I sat in the walk-in cooler for 2 hours. And I had, like, my ears was, like, red. You know, I was just, like, sweating, I guess. And, you know, the mango lassi, have you ever had it? So I drink, like, a gallon of the mango lassi just to make it cool down.
Cool it off, man. I'm glad I'm not the only one who's done that with the mango lassi after some too spicy food. I'm Gina Kaufman, and now the food critics are here to help us find the best Indian and South Asian fare in town, whatever your spiciness level. Call 816-235-2888 with your recommendations. 816-235-2888, or tweet us. We are at KCURCST. The critics are Mary Block, Charles Feruza, and Bonjuing Lee. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
So, Bonjuing, I'm going to start with you because as a food photographer, you travel internationally and your focus is food. So how does Kansas City's Indian food landscape compare with what you encounter in other places, both in the U.S. and beyond?
We actually have a surprisingly high number of, you know, South Asian restaurants here, surprisingly. So I think it's great.
So when we are talking about South Asian more broadly, as opposed to just Indian, what does that include and how much of that is there in Kansas City?
Well, actually, in the green room before this, we were talking about what exactly South Asia. So we looked it up, and it comprises, you know, a lot of the all the countries on the subcontinent of Asia, including India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Bhutan, Bangladesh. So, and quite honestly, I don't know if there are a lot of restaurants in Kansas City that represent some of these other countries, but definitely Indian and Pakistani, I definitely do know we do have.
So, and when you say that we have a high number of Indian restaurants, is there anything else? Like, is there a type of Indian cuisine that we don't see here? I've had friends from other cities talk about that there's like an Indian fast food scene almost in their cities, and that's something we don't really do.
Sure, and I think as a lot of other foreign cuisines are, Indian cuisine is highly regionalized. And so, sure, I mean, I think, you know, we know this from going to Chinese restaurants, that you go to Chinese restaurants, but Chinese food is very diverse, and I think Indian food is as well, and I don't think that we have that sort of regionality in our Indian restaurants here. And I do agree, I think most of the Indian restaurants we have here are just more this sort of mid-tier, casual-ish, family kind of style restaurant. Whereas in other cities, I've seen, you know, everything from Michelin-starred Indian restaurants to what you're talking about, fast casual or, you know, almost fast food type concepts.
Charles, Mary, how have you both seen the culture, the food culture in Kansas City change when it comes to Indian food and where it fits in?
You know, I will say that since the 1980s, most of the Indian cuisine you could find in Kansas City was Southern Indian. Don't ask me what the differences are because I'm not that fine-tuned. But because I remember there was kind of a, I don't know, there was kind of a buzz when Kansas City got its first Northern Indian restaurant. And I think you remember where that was, Mary. It was in Johnson County. I think the first Indian restaurant I ever went to in Kansas City, they were all in Johnson County. But the Northern Indian restaurant, I believe it's still in existence.
India Palace?
Yes, it was India
Palace. That was the first one I went to. It's been around for a long time.
So, but I, the and Bonjour, you would probably know more than I. I guess that the differences between Northern and Southern Indian cuisines are about as different as Northern and Southern American cuisine.
Yeah, it's pretty diverse. Yeah.
Well, so let's just start reviewing some food. Mary, you are a fan of the dish biryani. Explain what that is.
It's a rice dish, and it's very fragrant, has lots of wonderful spices in it. And you can have it vegetarian style. I like it with chunks of lamb. It can be with chicken. And it's just, it can be a meal in itself. If you think about, it's the Indian equivalent of Chinese fried rice.
Can you, where do you like to get it? And what sort of variation do you see in how it's prepared in Kansas City?
I like the one at Korma Sutra very much. And as I said, it just varies really by what kind of meat you put in it. But it all has the same basic ingredients.
And it, how would you describe the sort of like aromatics or the spices?
A lot of ginger, garlic.
Onion,
yeah. Turmeric, I believe.
And when it comes to Korma Sutra, so that's in Overland Park.
Yes.
What do you like about it? What else do you get there?
You know, when I go to an Indian place, it seems like the menus are basically the same. Some will have more goat, perhaps, or lamb. But I always find myself getting sort of the same basic things. I love to get a curry of some kind, usually chicken curry. At Korma Sutra, they have a great lamb vindaloo, which is spicy curry with chunks of potato in it. I love the biryani and Rogan Josh, which is a different kind of curry from Kashmir, and it's got a tart yogurt sauce to it.
Can you describe that in a little more detail? Like the particular one that you like to order at Korma Sutra?
Yes, it's a lamb curry. It takes on, because of the yogurt, it takes on a more of a light brown hue. But I'm a medium person, so you count on having heat, but not so much that you can't taste all the ingredients.
You know, Mary, you are recommending a couple of Indian restaurants north of the river, and I'm interested in just whether there is a sort of, whether the Northland has kind of like its own Indian food scene in a way, because it almost seems like some of the newer Indian restaurants, that's where they've opened. Siva Swagat, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, honestly, I apologize.
I think it is Swagat.
I was thinking it was Swagat, but I'm not positive either. So,
but at any rate, yes, Indian food in the Northland.
You know, they maybe look a little bit more upscale, but I feel like they're all kind of the same. I mean, it's a terrible generalization, but the menus are quite similar. We don't have, to Bonj Wing's point, we don't have anything like Rasika from Washington, D.C. That's really a fine Indian upscale restaurant. It's gotten James Beard Awards and Michelin stars. And I mean, the spinach is just phenomenal. And we don't have a place like that. These are all more traditional. They have a buffet and just the usual lineup.
Bonjouring, what do you like about Siva? That's on your list.
I just love how good everything is there. I've been there once, to be honest, but everything we had there was great. And I think as Mary just listed off a litany of dishes that you can order, you know, it's a very family style kind of occasion. So you get to try a lot if you go with, you know, a group of friends or family. And so, you know, we tried a bunch of curries at Siva. They were all great. The naan was great there. Very great, good service. And it's actually quite a spacious restaurant as well.
Bajwi makes a great point. It's like going out for Chinese. You don't want to just order your own dish. You want
right.
to
you wouldn't,
order a bunch of dishes right. and share them.
And a lot of the flavors tend to be pretty intense, so sharing gets you a little more diversity.
What made this particular restaurant, Siva, what sets it apart for you that it's like on your top three?
I think, number one, it's in the Northland, which it's not a particularly, diverse restaurant scene up there. And so that's a great treasure. And also back to Swagat, it's been open for more than a decade,
yeah.
at least. But Siva is newer. It's in Liberty. It's in a strip mall. And like I said, I like how open the restaurant is. I love how friendly the service was. The service is great. And I thought all the food that came out was just cooked really well.
Don't leave out one of the most important components of that restaurant. It is so spotlessly clean.
It is also,
you could
yes.
probably eat off the floor. And one of the reasons for that is the owner used to be a health inspector.
Really?
Yeah. So...
So it's health department
approved.
Yeah. yeah. Well, so that's Siva in the Northland, and Mary, tell me about India Palace.
So that's the first one I ever went to. It's got to have been around for more than 30 years, and they just do all the basic dishes really, really well. And another place that you'll find tons of families.
Let's talk to Anne. Anne is calling us from Lenexa. Hi, Anne.
Hi. Good morning.
What do you want to share?
Well, I want to suggest Sohela's Kitchen, and it's in the new Lenexa Public Market. They have the best butter chicken. It's she and her husband. They're local, small, and they're just amazing.
And you order butter chicken. Describe that dish and what makes theirs so good.
Oh, boy. I wish I had the ability. I'm Italian, so it's hard for me to grab the right spices. But it's just got all of the spices, and it kind of melts in your mouth. They pour it over their rice, and, you taste the turmeric and I wish I could speak to the spices. I really don't know.
No, that's okay.
I was listening to your program, and I just had to call in because it is just – and they have other things as well, too, and they make their mango lassi and everything, too.
So, and this is called Sohela's Kitchen?
Correct. Uh-huh, and it's in the Lenexa Public Market. It's fairly new. It's kind of like a local food court, if you will, and just different styles of food.
Well, thank you, Anne. You can call with your favorite Indian food or South Asian cuisine of any kind at 816-235-2888. But do it fast because time is going by and we've just got a little of it left. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman here with Mary Block, Charles Feruza, and Bonjuing Lee. They are our food critics today on KCUR's Central Standard, and they're helping us find the best Indian and South Asian fare in town. You can call 816-235-2888 with your favorite restaurant, your favorite dish, the thing you're looking for in town and just haven't quite found yet, or perhaps you come from this region and have a favorite recipe to share. 816-235-2888. We have not yet talked about specifically vegetarian dishes at Indian restaurants in town, Bondring.
Yeah, Indian food can be very friendly to vegans and vegetarians. So, sometimes when I'm going out to dinner with friends who are vegan or vegetarian, we sometimes do choose Indian because it has something for everyone. And there is a big focus on a lot of legumes and, there's lentils, there's chickpeas, there are dishes based off of those, lots of vegetables. Rice is used as a base, which is, also vegetarian friendly and vegan friendly.
So where would you recommend for like a saag paneer or a navratan korma, one of the sort of better known vegetarian dishes in the repertoire?
I've had great versions at Siva. I've also had a really good version at Culture Curry, which is down in, I think it would be Leawood.
And right? That's culture and curry with a K.
That's sorry, mm-hmm. Yes, culture spelled with a K and curry with a K. Maybe it's in Overland Park. And then I do know that there are vegetarian vegan options at Chai Chai, which is in Brookside.
We should name that as one of Kansas City's very few Pakistani mm-hmm. restaurants.
Talk to me about Chai Chai, the restaurant itself, what you like to order there.
It's a very nice, friendly, family-owned place. It's more of a little cafe.
Yeah, it's a cozy neighborhood restaurant, I would say.
And they serve Pakistani street food. And it's
the most delicious samosas ever.
I was just about to say that. I'm not a big samosa fan, but those are outstanding.
They are outstanding, yeah.
We did a story about them a while back, and that's how they actually started, was intending to just sell samosas out of that storefront.
Yeah.
So that was the beginning of it. So what else do you like to get there? Samosas?
Oh, gosh. They have various dinner options. It's just a nice place to go lay back and have a snack.
I think they are open for lunch, right?
Yeah. And dinner.
Let's talk to Kent in Lee Summit. Hi, Kent.
I want to say that I love India Palace, and I just moved, though, and I'm sad to be farther away from it. So I'm out here in South Lee Summit, and I was wondering if you recommend any restaurants over on the Lee Summit Blue Springs area.
Anything in the eastern Kansas City suburbs?
Well, we know there has to be
one. There has to be something in Lee Summit.
I am unfamiliar with that.
Me too.
Area.
Sorry, Kent, but if you find out, I hope you will let us know. We have not talked about Rushi.
Oh, it's a great place. Didn't it start out all vegetarian at one point? Or am I getting that all wrong, which I probably am? But Rushi is a very stylish place. The food is very well prepared. They have a delicious buffet, mm-hmm. as buffets go.
Yep. Mary, this is on your list.
Yeah, I like it for the buffet because it's a extensive buffet. You get lots of choices. The dishes are constantly replenished, so it looks nice every time you go up there, which is important to me. And it's always very hot and delicious.
Let's talk to Kelly in St. Joe. Hi, Kelly.
Hi there.
What do you want to share?
So I got really excited when you guys mentioned Swagit. It has been one of those restaurants that ever since I came to the Kansas City area, it's just been one of those restaurants that I keep taking people to. And I get really excited for Swagit. It has an amazing, amazing buffet. And it's just, I've never been to a buffet where I can fill my plate with one dish and be completely satisfied with it.
And that's what you experienced there. What is your favorite thing you've tasted there?
The chicken tikka masala. It's a really basic dish, I think, but it's the way they make it is so remarkable.
Can you put your finger on why?
Let's see. It has such a savory flavor. They chunk up their chicken and it just comes apart exactly at the right time. And just everything is just so good.
Well, Kelly, thank you for that. Mary, chicken tikka masala is one of the dishes that you like to order at Indian restaurants. Can you explain a little bit about what it is?
Yes, I like it for the same reason that the caller does. The chicken has been roasted in a tandoor oven, and so it's been marinated. It's really flavorful. It's not dried out at all. It has that bright, they put food coloring in, but basically, but it has, so you've got that chicken and then it simmers in a dark, kind of an orange tomato sauce, lots of herbs and spices, put it over rice.
And it's like a
very
creamy
satisfying
sauce, right?
It is. Yeah.
Let's talk to Drew in Olathe. Hello, Drew.
Hey, guys. My recommendation is for Raj Mahal in Olathe. So anyone who loves Indian food and lives in Olathe, you don't have to drive down to Oak Park or anywhere else to have Indian food. They have a very reasonable priced buffet for lunch, and I'm a vegan, and they're very accommodating. If I want something cooked, generally I can ask during the lunch buffet, and they'll cook something extra. And on top of that, they will have at least two or three vegan dishes. And one more thing, they've even been accommodating when I've talked about other dishes and say, hey, just call us, mention it, you know, 30 minutes before we're going to open or something. And we'll make this for you as well. So
what,
definitely recommend this.
What is something vegan that you have tried at Raj Mahal that you especially liked?
I like spinach. I like the Indian spinach dishes, and this is an exception for me because I generally hate spinach cooked. I like to eat spinach raw. I mean, I really don't like spinach cooked, but I love it the way that Indians prepare spinach when they cook it. So,
well, thank you, Drew.
Yeah.
He's recommending especially the spinach dishes at Raj Mahal in Olathe.
I think he makes also a good point is that I think a lot of Indian restaurants will accommodate vegans, even if a dish, a cornerstone of Indian cooking is ghee, which is clarified butter. But if you tell them, and oftentimes they can just cook it with a different fat instead of, you know, a vegan-friendly fat instead of ghee, and I think that's a great point that he makes there.
You know, we've talked a lot about the entrees at Indian restaurants. We have not talked about naan. Talk to me about naan.
I could make a meal out of naan, and my husband often does. It's just a really lovely flatbread, and you can have it plain. You can have it with garlic, onions. Some places even stuff it with mashed potatoes. And it's a great sauce getter-upper.
Yeah, it's a great – Indian cuisine is a great – one of those what I call carbs on carbs type of cuisine too. You can just max out on the carbs, and naan is definitely one of –
I mean, and some local restaurants, they have quite an array of breads. You don't have to stick with naan, which is very specific. But I love paratha, which is the kind of more spongy bread. It's delicious.
Is there any place in town that you particularly recommend that?
Well, I'm going to say, because I had it there yesterday, Taj Mahal has a great version. And, Rushi has great breads and a nice assortment of them.
Some of them probably have the crackers, the crispy.
Oh, the chapati?
Yes.
And what about dessert?
I'm usually too full for dessert by the time I get to that part of the meal.
And also, I think for me, the few Indian desserts that I have had tend to be very sweet. So you have to really like sweet desserts, you know, like gulab jamun. It's basically what I think in the little clip that you played before, it is what he described it as a donut soaked in honey essentially. Yeah. It's pretty sweet.
There is also, there are sauces that you can put on both before the meal as like almost condiments, but also, Mary, you're saying that you like your biryani specifically with a side of raita.
Yes. It helps offset the heat.
So what is raita?
It's got sour cream and it's got some herbs in it.
It's a dairy.
Yeah,
it's a dairy based. It's like a yogurty.
Yogurt. I'm sorry, not sour cream.
It's sort of the Indian version of a tzatziki sauce.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. That's exactly what it is. And it just
it's a cooling.
Nice contrast.
Is there any place in town that has a dish that you would describe as just unique to that place?
I can't think of one.
I can't either.
Because this was a conversation about not just Indian food, but also South Asian, Chai Shai is the restaurant that's come up as an example of non-Indian South Asian cuisine, and that is a Pakistani restaurant. What are some of the dishes that you find there that really stand out to you?
Oh, besides the samosas, which is sort of their signature dish, I don't know.
They focus more on red meat, I think, lamb and beef.
Yeah, I'm going to plead ignorance on this one. I really don't know.
All right. Well, guys, this has been fun. Thank you for joining us, and I appreciate all of your recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been a show with the food critics, and our time is up. Mary Block, Charles Fruza, Bonjuing Lee are the critics. Charles is KCUR's longtime food critic. Mary blogs about food at Around the Block, and Bonjuing is an international food photographer, better known professionally as the Ulterior Epicure. The official list of Kansas City's best Indian and South Asian dishes will be online later today at kcur.org/centralstandard, just in time for the weekend. While you're there, you can grab any of the shows you might have missed this week. We had a lively discussion about parent involvement in schools yesterday, particularly public schools. We also spoke with Kansas City artist Dylan Mortimer about his art and his health. He has cystic fibrosis, and he's waiting for a second lung transplant. His take on that experience is really humbling and really inspiring. KCUR.org/centralstandard. This show is produced by Melody Rowell with Chris Young, Coy Duggar, Suzanne Hogan, and intern Sophia Gillespie. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. Linda Scher runs the board for us, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman.